All right, we're going to be in Genesis again, right? So we've been in Genesis, and we haven't gotten past Genesis chapter 1. That's okay. There's a lot going on in Genesis chapter 1, right? You know, God's only creating the world and the universe, so there's a lot going on there. We ended up Genesis really on day five, and so I'm not going to recap a whole lot in terms of what's happening here, other than to say that there's 6 days of creation and 1 day of rest, right? The first 3 days in creation is really ordering creation. The second 3 days in creation is then filling creation. So he's preparing, ordering creation, and then he begins to fill creation in the inhabitants. So day four, he's filling the skies with the stars, the lights and the expanse of the sky. Day five, he's filling the earth with the fish and the fowl and the animals. And then we get to day six, and day six is where we're really going to be here. And let me find my place here. Just one second.
Friday? Day six or day? We already did day five.
We did day five.
Yes, okay. We did day five. We're going to do day six.
Around verse 24-ish.
We are on around verse 24-ish. Yeah. And so, verse 24 in day six, and we actually covered the first part of day six. The second part of day six that we're going to cover here is the creation of man. And so I'm going to read in the ESV, starting in about verse 24. So verse 24 says, "And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." So I'm going to stop right there for just a second. So there's a couple of different things that are happening here. If we just back up to verse 22 when he begins creating the living creatures. Verse 22 says, "And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on earth." So when God begins to create the living creatures, the birds, the fish, the creatures on the earth, he blesses those creatures and he asks them to go ahead and be fruitful and multiply. And so that's part of the blessing. When we get to the creation of man, he gives them the same blessing, but then he gives them another command on top of that. And so you're going to see that here in a second. And so keep that in mind as well, that he begins to bless the creation. One of the other things that I think is really interesting about creation, and which would be different than the way other people view God, is that God creates and then he observes his creation. So there's an interaction that God has between himself and the creation. It's not the view of God that says that God creates and then kind of just lets creation do its own thing. He backs off. There's a view that some people have that God is a distant God, right? That he doesn't have a relationship with his creation, that he's uninvolved in creation. But what we've seen time and time again through all of these days is that he creates and then he observes his creation. So at the end of verse 25, it says that, "And God saw that it was good." Do you see that? And so God is not just creating something. And the other piece to this too, and we'll get to it here in a second as well, when he finishes creation of man, God creates things that are good. At the end of creation, you're going to see that he says that everything that he created was good. And so there's a little bit, well, what happened to evil? How does evil happen? If God created everything and pronounced everything that he created good, how does evil come into the picture? And we're going to see that through the fall, those things are introduced into the picture, not as a creation of God. Yes, there's the possibility of evil. We'll talk about that when we get to the fall, which will probably be a few weeks from now. But we'll be there soon, hopefully. So again, God observes, God rules, he commands. One of the other things that we said earlier on, just kind of from a recap standpoint, is that God names things. He creates and he names. That's also showing dominion. Obviously, if creating the object wasn't enough, naming it especially in ancient Israel, you know, naming something is an indication that you are above, that you control, that you rule over. And so he does this with creation. In day six, he creates all of the animals, but he's not done yet. And we covered a little bit of the animals before. One last thing that I want to say is that it mentions that he creates them as different kinds. And then we mentioned this last time. One of the notes that I have says that the ability to breed different kinds of horses or different kinds of dogs is well established. However, the crossbreeding between a horse and a donkey, for instance, produces a sterile animal. And so from the evolution standpoint, evolution has difficulty producing any evidence of one kind of animal producing another kind of animal. And so that's the old a whale turns into a bat type argument, right? Evolutionists would say, well, over a lengthy period of time, that's a possibility. But there is so much fine-tuning and an exact fine-tuning that would have to take place in nature that type of thing is unlikely and I would say impossible for it to happen. So
I've heard the odds of the evolution story actually happening would be like a hurricane hitting a junkyard. At the end of the hurricane, a Boeing 747 was built.
That's right. Yeah. Can you say that louder?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, should I? No. No, but that's what I heard.
So that's interesting.
It's going to get edited out.
Sorry, we didn't hear it down on this side.
Did y'all hear it?
No.
Yeah, so say it again.
So the chances of the evolution story actually happening the way they are is that it's like a hurricane hitting a junkyard, and after the hurricane, a 747 is built out of the junk. Okay? Boeing 747. So that the probability of that occurring.
And you're actually the second person this week that told me that story.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The exact same story. So I don't know where you heard it or if you heard it recently.
No, I've heard it years ago. But,
wow, that's interesting. Second person that's told me that this week. So it's very important, obviously, then, that if we come up twice. Right. So
timing is everything.
We may do a little bit more. I think I promised that we would dive a little bit deeper in the evolution creation debate. I want to get past, and by the way, that's a little bit of a just kind of letting you know where we're going, right? So we're going to finish the creation of God, and we'll finish the day seven, probably today. And we'll get to, before we jump into chapter two in Genesis, we'll probably take a little bit of a break, and we'll do some discussion, specifically evolution and creation, because there's a lot of questions about that, and there's some different things that I'd would like to share with you guys on that.
Give me real quick, baby. Mm-hmm. Back on 24, can you read just first?
Sure. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds.
Okay.
And your version says?
Let the earth produce.
Okay.
It's just in the wording.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about earlier is that God created these things as mature living creatures. He didn't create baby animals or eggs or things of that nature. The way it appears just from the plain reading, and when we get to the creation of man the same way, is he's creating them mature. And we said that could be evidence for a younger earth view in that he created things with the appearance of age, right? And so potentially and possibly that could be how that would be how the earth and the universe would also have been created.
So the chicken did come first.
Yes.
Did come first.
There's your answer.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he said it, so now I get it.
Now, yeah. So let's look at verse.
Mark explained it.
Let's look at verse 25. You know, let's see. We read 25. Let's look at verse 26 then. We're going to pick up the creation of man. And it says, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food, and every beast of the earth, and every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, and everything that has breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So a lot longer kind of description when he talks about the creation of man. But the first interesting thing to talk about here is that this was a special occasion. So when you're at work, there's an important decision to be made. Now, sometimes those of you that are high-level, you know, impactful managers, you'll make that decision in a vacuum because you know it's the right thing to do. But other times, people go to a board of directors, or they'll go to a committee, they'll go to a different group within the organization, and they'll have a meeting, and they'll say, look, we're going to make a decision, but we're going to consult on this decision, and we're going to make a joint decision. Usually, the bigger decisions are not made in a vacuum. Usually, the bigger decisions are made after lots of discussion. Which direction are we going to take the company in, right? And are we going to buy or sell? You know, these types of things are happening.
So we took this to the committee.
So yeah, so thinking, here we are. You see where I'm going with that, Ken? God comes in and he says in verse 26, it's interesting, it says, then God said,
they were created on the sixth day.
And that word God, then God said, that's Elohim, right? That's a singular. Right. Then God said, let us make man in our own image. So he goes from a singular, let us make man in our own image. There's a consultation going on there prior to the event. It's God. We've already established that Jesus Christ is present from verses in the New Testament. Jesus Christ is present at creation. We know from the very beginning that the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And so we know that the Spirit of God, like a mother hen over creation, is also there. And so the presence of the Trinity is seen in this. God said, let us make. There's a consultation happening. There's a special occasion. One of the Warren Wisserby says that it was a divine deliberation among the Godhead. A divine deliberation among the Godhead. Let us create man. Question.
I knew you were going to make a face.
He put his heads together.
He put his heads together.
Came up with a...
I don't see consultation so much.
Okay. Then God said, let us make man. There's a conversation among the Godhead. Let us make man in our own image. Obviously, you know, reading into it a little bit, the answer must have been among the Godhead.
Right.
Yeah, let's do that. Right. It sounds like a good idea.
And he said us.
So,
means,
right. Yeah, so the whole point is...
I think part of the point...
I think you're
all in agreement.
Yeah.
The Trinity is there.
Yeah, that was already...
It's an agreement.
And kind of part of the point is... that there's something different going on with the creation of man that you don't see this happening with the others. The others are, and God said, let this happen, and God said, let this happen. This time, it's, and God said, let us make man in our own image. Do you see that?
Right.
And so there's a little bit different thing going on there. Maybe we're reading a little bit into it to say that, hey, there's a consultation that God, he's not sure, and he kind of wants to run it by Jesus, and he wants to run it by the Holy Spirit. Not really what I'm saying. What I'm really saying is it's a special occasion. There's something different happening when he creates man.
And isn't, you see, I think that? This is the first reference where it's plural.
Yeah,
so,
this is an introduction to the Trinity as well.
Exactly.
It's an introduction to the Trinity. We see the pieces of the Trinity in there, but here's an introduction to the Trinity. The other thing that whenever you watch a good movie kind of always ends in a climax. That's what's happening here. This is the end of creation, right? This is the last day. He's creating man on the last day. So again, it's a special occasion. Something's happening, something that's different. So the climax of God's creation is to be able to create man. The other thing that you see is at the very end, if you were to skip all the way to the very end of this day, verse 31, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the other days, everything's good. At the end of the final act of creation, the end of day six, he observes creation, and and Moses, who we presume is writing this, adds the little, what is that, an adjective? I don't know, the descriptor, right? Mm-hmm. It says, and it was very good. Yeah. So a little bit different.
Yeah.
Believe that the reason his entire creation is very good is now that he's capped creation with the creation of man.
The Jewish church explains the plural, let us. It's very easy for us as Christians to, he was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have an answer to that. It's a good question.
If you go to chapter 3:22, the Lord God says, since man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil.
Yep.
I mean, it's just kinda,
yep.
But the other thing that I was going to, this is, especially verse 27, where it said, he created him in the image of God.
Yep.
Okay, you want me to go there? You don't want me to go there.
That's where I'm heading next. That's where I'm heading next.
Well, let me just...
we're going to hover on that for a while.
If we are going on the same... Where a lot of people get that we are little gods.
Uh-huh.
And I can't stand that.
Yeah, I understand that.
It just gets taken out of context so much.
Yeah, so that's where we're heading next, is the whole creation of man. Not only is it the climax for creation, but things are a little bit different with man. Man's created in his own image, right? So that, let's look at that word create before we go further. It says, let us make man, or that word in some other translations would say create or make. That word translated from the Hebrew is bara. And bara is the same word that we've used earlier on in Genesis, and it means to create, to shape, or form. One of the commentators that I have here says that this is the third time we find the word bara, which means to create out of nothing. And then so we see that man is created. He's something new. So again, the Genesis record shows that man is created new from nothing. It's not man evolved from something else, from a different life form.
Right.
It's that man was created as a new creature from nothing. Do you see that? And so there's a little bit more discussion about Adam himself in chapter 2. When we get to chapter 2, we'll cover that. But here again, man is created from nothing. Acts chapter 17, verse 28 says, for in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So this is...
17:26.
Acts chapter 17, verse 28. For in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your poets have said, for we are also his offspring. We are the offspring of God. In and of itself, if we were just to stop there and kind of ponder that for a minute, that should be amazing to us. That should be moving to us, that the God of the universe created us, his offspring. To then know, to go further, to say he created us in his image, what does that mean? It says that his image, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Now, some people have taken pains to try and figure out the difference between our image and our likeness. What's the difference between image and likeness? I'm not going to necessarily go there, but what I will say is that image, the image of God, is spiritual rather than physical. God doesn't create man in his own image, and that means we all look like God. Like physically look like God.
Say that one more time.
The image of God is spiritual rather than physical. The image of God is spiritual rather than physical. It doesn't mean that we all physically look like God, right? And I'm going to talk here about what it does mean. I remember when Jesus in Matthew 22 was shown the coin. The Pharisees had tossed a coin to Jesus, and they asked him. They had asked him about paying taxes. And Jesus looks at the coin, and what does he say? Yeah, he says, whose image and inscription is this, right? Whose physical image is this? Well, this is a little bit different. The image of God on our lives implies a couple of things. Number one, his image on our lives implies ownership. We are tied to God whether we like it or not, right? Whether we like it or not, and by the way, whether people believe it or not, we're tied to God, we're created in his image. It implies ownership. It implies capability on our part to do things beyond sometimes what we even imagine. You'll see where I'm going with that. And then responsibility. We have a responsibility because we have an image to uphold.
Right.
Have you ever thought about that? Has anyone ever told you, remember who you are?
You're Rivera by God.
You're a Rivera.
God, you're not going to embarrass this family.
You're not going to embarrass this family. You have an image to uphold. We are created in God's image. And so we have... So we have a responsibility with that, whether we realize it, whether we have thought about it, whether we have really contemplated it or not, we have a responsibility to uphold. But having the image, when you look philosophically and theologically, it means a little bit more. People are different than animals in several different ways, and this image of God is what places that impression upon us. So number one is we have personalities. We have a personality, we have a self-consciousness, an awareness, and a self-determination. And so there are moral characteristics that we have as people that are different when you look at the animal kingdom. So we have personalities, we have a self-consciousness, we have self-determination. We're also spiritual beings, right? So the essential attributes of a spirit... And this one, I would say, this one comes from just biblical doctrine in and of itself. And so here, the essential attributes of a spirit are that we have a reason, a conscience, and a will. We have a reason, a conscience, and a will. These are the essential attributes of having a spirit. We're able to reason. We have a conscience. And there's a little bit of that moral imprint upon our lives where we understand right and wrong, whether we believe in God or not. We have reason, we have a conscience, and we have a will. That goes back to that self-determination. The spirit is also sometimes referred to as a rational, moral, free agent. What do you think I mean by that? I mean, now this is like put your thinking cap on.
It's reason, you said?
A spirit is a rational, moral, free agent.
We can make decisions for ourselves.
We can make decisions for ourselves, right and wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. And we are.
We can defend those decisions. We can argue those decisions, right and wrong, right? A little bit different than the animal kingdom. When you see the animal kingdom, you often look at the animal kingdom and you say, hey, they act on instinct,
right?
Right? Whereas a person is a spirit, we are a rational, moral, free agents, and so we act morally, immorally. We have a will, we have a self-determination, we have a conscience. It's different than the animal kingdom, and very hard for evolutionary biology really to explain, to be honest with you. Questions at that point?
Reading ahead here, so is this rational, moral? Are we the source of evil?
Are we the source of evil? Yeah. So that's a good question. It's a little bit close to what I'm about to mention about having the Spirit of God. So part of having the Spirit of God is that we also have a moral nature. We're created, and I've already touched on this a little bit. We're created with a moral nature. And we're created with what some theologists, is that right?
Theologians?
Thank you. I don't know. I'm thinking biologist, yeah, theologist. Yeah. Some theologians would call original righteousness. We were created righteous. When God finishes the day, he says it's very good. He doesn't say it's very good, but there's something wrong with those people, right?
Right.
He creates people with original righteousness. He creates people good and sinless. All of that goodness and all of that sinlessness is lost in the fall. Now you could say, are people the origin of evil? You know, the possibility, you know, God understands, and I think Alan alluded to it, which will come up a little bit later on in Genesis. God has the knowledge of good and evil. The people have the ability to seek out that knowledge, and eventually they open the door. Kind of the, if you use the mythological content, you know, they open Pandora's box, if you will, by rebelling against God and by desiring to understand and know good and evil. The fact of the matter is they can't handle temptation and evil when it's presented to them. They're created good, but they are I wouldn't go so far as to say they create evil, but I would say they open the door to evil in the world. Or that they're the source of evil,
right.
But they open the door of evil to the world. And so it's interesting, when he creates them, he definitely creates them moral. He definitely creates them righteous.
So the word
he definitely creates them sinless.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the keys to having the Spirit of God, and that imprint is that they are a moral, a rational, free agent.
Would you say
God didn't create them as robots,
right,
that had to respond only to good things and do only those things.
And we have to state the obvious here. This was perfection. This was, Eden was perfect.
Mm.
This was, there was no need for anything else. They were given dominion over the plants. They were given over the animals, everything.
But it brings a question, and we probably won't get to it, because I'm thinking a little ahead too. Okay,
he does say so.
You know, man was sinless. Therefore, let's not sin.
Yep.
And then, you know, God said, don't do this. And so sinless people wouldn't do this, but they did. And I bet this is in 2 or 3 weeks you'll
hit that. It's in 2 or 3 weeks we'll hit that. And yep, the key word is going to be temptation.
Yes.
And the key word when we get to the fall, the key word that we're going to see is temptation. And how does temptation turn into sin? And one of the questions that we'll look at, and this is previewing from weeks down the road, how does temptation turn into sin? And is temptation, and is the act of being tempted, sin in and of itself, right? What happens to Adam and Eve is they're tempted, and that temptation takes root. We'll read from some verses in the New Testament, when that temptation turns root, takes root in your life, that's when it turns to sin. Okay, so we'll see that as we get to the fall. But
would you call it original?
Original, original righteousness.
Righteousness.
Yes, original righteousness. Mm-hmm. So remember, lost in the fall, but restored in Christ. It's important in here to remember that what was lost is restored. Colossians 3:10. So they have this knowledge, they have this understanding, they have this sinlessness, this righteousness on their lives. In Colossians 3:10, Paul says that all of that is being renewed, that the people that believe in Christ in Colossians 3:10 are being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. They're being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created them. So when Christ comes, when he takes our penalty, and when we believe and turn to him in full repentance, and we seek his forgiveness and his grace and his mercy, then what happens in our lives is that we're being restored back to the image of God. It doesn't necessarily happen overnight. The one thing that we say often here is that we are saved, we're being saved, we will be saved. It's a process that happens, but Colossians 3:10 says that we are being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created us. So what I would say is that we are being conformed to back to that image. That image is broken in the fall, and we as Christians are being conformed back to that image. That's why I say all the time that we as people, we like to pursue the temptations, we like to pursue the things that we believe and we perceive and that we are often told are going to make us happy, are going to make us joyful, are going to make us complete, are going to make us content, satisfied, all of those pursuits. If those pursuits are done without focusing on Christ, if those pursuits are done without Christ in our lives, then they're vain pursuits. Do you see that? Because we were created in his image, and it's only being conformed to that image that we will be truly joyful, truly happy, and in the right place. Doing what you were created to do is like a hand fitting perfectly into a glove, right? It's hand and glove. It's the perfect fit. It's what we were meant to be. Do you see that? So we're deceiving ourselves when we try to satisfy ourselves with anything else, because that's not what we were created for.
So ambition alone is sinful.
No. And that's interesting.
Wrong,
I wouldn't say that ambition is sinful at all. I would say that ambition is a two-edged sword, right?
All
right.
It's all about execution.
Ambition can be wrong, but it's not always wrong.
I said it wrong.
But yeah. But I think I understand.
Yeah.
Understand
I
where you're going there. With that. That's okay.
As opposed to reality.
Don't set the bar too high for yourself.
Little God's statement.
The little God's statement?
Yeah.
I think the little God's part is often taken out of context by some people.
It's often taken out of context with a lot of pastors and Mormons.
We're not little gods in the sense that we have a sovereignty that's in and of ourselves. And oftentimes, when people talk about little gods,
it doesn't even say that, though.
No, it doesn't here, but in the New Testament, there are references, and I don't have those references in front of me. But
I mean, God doesn't say let's make a copy of ourselves.
Let's make another one of us.
Mm-hmm. He says let's make a likeness, right?
Mm-hmm. A reflection of who we are.
Exactly, a reflection is
he
a good word. Yeah,
him in the image.
Yeah. Right. But he doesn't say, let's split ourselves off and make another one.
Yeah,
So when people...
I'm just thinking about the whole, where science is going and so forth and such, and, you know, I'm thinking in terms of digital, that you can make these perfect copies now and so forth. I don't think that's what that says, right? It says likeness and image, but not perfect copy, not exact duplicate.
Yeah, so
I'm just saying this is the part that irritates me.
Yeah.
So if we were diving a lot deeper than we are today in the theological stuff, we'd be talking about the communicable and incommunicable attributes of God, things of that nature, which would really And so what I would say to that is that God created us in His image, and the things that I've covered are the reflections of that image of God, having a spirit nature, having a moral compass that's ingrained and embedded into our hearts. That's kind of primarily what's happening here. When we are with Him in heaven, and we'll be free from the presence of sin, we have no comprehension or understanding of what that's going to be like. When we are with Him and we're free from the presence of sin, to our present selves, we will be like.
Right.
We'll be perfectly conformed to that image, and we will be like a God. But it's a little g God. Let me tell you, it's not a sovereignty that's in and of ourselves. It's not a righteousness that's in and of ourselves. It's only through and because of Jesus Christ that we can obtain anything close to what we will obtain and what we've been promised to obtain. And I think sometimes people misinterpret the understanding of that, and other religions and other things do that.
The pursuit of by science we can create life, right?
Yeah.
That we're capable.
Right.
If God can do it, we can do it.
Right.
I can make a person just like God can make a person.
Right.
And that's not what this says.
No, it doesn't. You're exactly right. Exactly right. So again, lost in the fall, the righteousness, restored in Christ. The last thing I want to say is that's not a mistake. God created something very good, and God in His wisdom and sovereignty and knowledge of all things knew the fall would happen and prepared a way, right? And when we get to the fall and some of those things, we may explore the question, why would he even leave that possibility out there? And just to preview that a little bit is because He wants a real relationship with us. He didn't create us to be robots. He didn't create us to be people that only had one choice, and that would be to worship Him. And so because He knew the fall would happen, He prepared a way from the beginning for us to be reconciled to Him. So what are the implications of being created in His image? So one of the implications of being created in His image is that we actually have knowledge of God. One of the commentators that I read said it is also the necessary condition of our capacity to know God. and therefore the foundation of our religious nature. If we were not like God, we could not know him. If we were not like God, we could not know him. We should be as the beasts which perish. If we were not like God, we could not know him. We should be like the beasts which perish. There's an entire kind of moral argument that can be made that because we understand right and wrong, there is a creator. Without a creator, we wouldn't even understand the difference between right and wrong, good and evil. Because there's an imprint of God on our lives, and we're created in his image, because of that, we have the ability to even know who God is, to have that religious nature. If you look across all people groups around the world, all people groups have an understanding that there is a God. They have a belief that there is a God. And then you have, of course, you have science now. And I would say that science has almost in some ways become the God to replace God for some people. So this image is
because the reason of that is because the science part of it, to a human, becomes more tangible. Mm. So they lean towards something that's more tangible than it is that can have to dwell with.
Yeah, Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen yet believe. And so there are people who will only believe in what they can see.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yes, faith does come into play. Absolutely. So we have the knowledge of God. What's the other implication? And what's one other implication of this? And I would say that the other implication is dignity. Listen to this quote from Wayne Grudem. He says that every single human being, no matter how much the image of God is marred by sin, or illness, or weakness, or age, or any other disability, still has the status of being in God's image, and therefore must be treated with dignity and respect that's due to God's image bearer. One more time. Every single human being, no matter how much the image of God is marred by sin, or illness, or weakness, or age, or any other disability, every other human being, still has the status of being in God's image, and therefore must be treated with dignity and respect that's due to God's image bearers.
Who is that?
My notes take that one step further. Not only should we treat others as in God's image, but we should look at ourselves the same way, right?
Yeah.
It says is, because we bear God's image, we can feel positive about ourselves. Criticizing or downgrading ourselves is criticizing what God has made and the abilities he's given us.
So tell me about your thoughts on what are some of the implications when you understand that all people are image bearers of God. What are some of the implications to that?
Well, that we're all, the thing we say in church all the time, we're all God's children, right? They're all God's.
We have responsibilities.
Exactly. The way we treat each other, the way we...
I think I might have something to say.
Yeah. I think me personally, it attacks the porn issue. Because that's someone's daughter, and someone's created that way. That's someone's son.
So what I said at the beginning of this is it's dignity. It's dignity. Treating all people with dignity, with respect.
And you look at certain religions that treat women, covering them up, and then beating them. I think it also reminds us that there are people that need. They're also God's creation. God didn't make a mistake with the mentally ill on the street.
Right.
God didn't make a mistake with those that are in abusive families.
Right.
It reminds us that God started off greatness, and they're God's creation. We should treat them as such, because he, by the grace of God, we're in a different situation.
But it's so much more than, you said kind of porn issue. I mean, it's everything. It's treating the server with dignity and respect. It's the every person.
Right.
Which gets to the greatest commandment.
There you go.
of love.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's
first, second, and third John. Yep. When we were going through that, the whole idea was, if you really believe this, then this is how you should act in obedience and love.
Yeah.
Alan.
Yeah, you had something to say?
Yeah, Alan.
Alan, he seemed to
follow that up.
Yeah.
Don't look at your friend Ivan.
No. He has a friend.
Yeah, Alan,
no,
what was Ivan going to say?
Friends are friends forever.
So,
if the Lord is the Lord of them.
So,
good.
Very
good.
Oh, boy. I don't remember who made the comment.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Alan.
I don't remember who made the comment, but talking about we're all God's children. So my question to that is, we were all created in His image.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, are we all God's children?
From a creation standpoint,
from
yes.
From a creation standpoint?
From a creation standpoint, yes. And from
standpoint.
The dignity standpoint, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From
God's intent for all
from the standpoint of being able to be redeemed, to being able to be saved, to being accepted by His grace and mercy,
being one of mine.
The answer is no.
Correct.
We're not. We're not all God's children.
Right.
What we're in the context of this morning, it's the creation aspect.
You have to be very careful using that, because there are people who
in the general aspect that says that everyone was created in the image of God. So my question was, what's the implication for us as Christians in how we treat and view other people, believers or unbelievers? And I would say it doesn't matter if they're believers or unbelievers. We owe them respect and dignity because they were created in the image of God and because they're image bearers of God, right? And sometimes, unfortunately, as Christians, sometimes, and I'm going to channel somebody else who's sometimes here, I won't say. But sometimes as Christians, we don't always treat people with that kind of dignity and respect.
Right.
And I would say not even just as Christians, but a lot of times just people that have different opinions than we do, right? Just people that maybe look different than we do. Maybe people that act different than we do. There are people out there that irritate us. There are people out there that anger us. There are people out there that we have no patience with. And whether it's Christian or not Christian, what this is saying is they are image bearers of Christ through creation, right? Not through salvation. I'm not talking about that. In creation. And because of that, we should treat people with dignity and respect. And I think Renee brings up an excellent point. In our church, there's been lots, because our pastor preached on pornography a couple of weeks ago. And that's one aspect of treat people with dignity and respect, not as objects for your own desire, for your own passion, for your own benefit, right? It's also something, and I'll throw this out there, we're in a there's presidential campaign happening now, and one of the primary things that comes up is the value and dignity of human life.
Yeah.
Whether it's the life of an unborn, the life of someone who's born, older, whatever it is, but that comes up often as well. And so, for me, this is also informing about that. The dignity, the respect that we treat people with is so important for us as Christians. And I think Bill brings up a great point. It goes hand in hand with the idea in the New Testament of the greatest commandment of love, right? Treating people with dignity and respect goes hand in hand with that commandment to love one another. I love it when Christ Himself says, you know, you've heard, you know, that you can love your family, love your neighbors, but I take it even further, He says, I say love your enemies. I mean, that's hard to do. I mean, if it was easy to do, you know, the world would be, you know, what the Beatles thought it should be, right? But even the Beatles broke up. So it's not like that.
Was that New Testament?
Not even, that's a
really good
New Testament apocrypha.
They didn't stay together,
right?
It's because of yoga.
So,
they didn't even stay with their wives.
Right? Exactly. Huh. Exactly. So here we have it, right?
That's pretty good.
Commandment to love, commandment to show dignity and respect to one another. It's extremely important. Let me touch on just a couple of things, and we may cover a little bit more. There's more to the image of God. After the image of God, and we've talked about that a little bit. If you look at verse 26 real quick, We just got to the first part of that, but it says, and let them have... Now, got to show you a couple more things here. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So he gives the entire earth into our hands. He gives us custody, if you will, of the earth. And so it says rule. That implies stewardship. So God has appointed us as caretakers of his world. Think about that for a minute. He's given us the responsibility to care for this world, to care for his creation. Huge responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Has anyone ever, like when you were younger or even older, handed you the keys to their car and said, here, borrow this, but take care of it? Treat it like it's yours. You ever heard that?
Yeah.
Treat it like it's yours. You don't run out and wrap it around a tree, hopefully. Right? Yeah, your father-in-law said something similar to that when you married his daughter, correct? Right?
Wow.
And so here is a responsibility for us also to care for the planet, for the world. This isn't I mentioned this before, this isn't the term that people use, this isn't a tree-hugger conversation. This is a simple conversation that says we've been given stewardship over. What does that word stewardship mean? We're to manage it well. We're to be caretakers of it. We're to be responsible, right? There's a resource to be managed.
Respect it.
The difference between all those things that we just said and sometimes I wish I had a different term, but the tree hugger kind of movement and that whole idea is that they've taken creation and they've begun to worship creation. That's not what he's saying here.
Yeah.
That we don't turn this caretaking and the stewardship into a worship of the creation, but it's a worship of the Creator and a respect for what He created.
When I think of stewardship, also I think of is it's not yours. You know, don't confuse.
That's good.
I'm not giving it to you. You have a responsibility
to care for, to manage.
Exactly.
And you're reminded, treat it like it's yours.
The word that was used.
But it is mine.
The word that was used by one of the commentators was that you've been given custody of it. You think about that in terms of bringing the whole image is bringing a child into your home. You custody, you manage, you maintain it.
And I can,
you care
and
for
I will
it.
One day take it back from you. That's at the end of the book.
So there's a whole idea here of not being wasteful, right? Of being conscious about that and not being wasteful in the things that we consume.
What's everything in perspective, materialism and everything? What
do
you think about it?
Two quicker things, and I'll just touch on these briefly, and then we'll go ahead and wrap it up, and we'll touch on a little bit more next week. Verse 27.
Oh, wow.
Hey. Blasted right through 26.
27. We did cover 27.
So God created man in his own image. He created him in the image of God. This is the part we didn't cover, Alan. He created them male and female.
Female.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
He created them male and female.
Why didn't Alan want to talk about that?
No,
I was hoping that
I was going to touch on it briefly.
Yeah, this.
I'm glad this is being recorded because it'll show everybody how you guys treat me.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that's out there.
We treat you with reverence.
He created them male and female.
What are you expecting out of that?
That does suggest equality in creation. We will touch that next week. Equality in creation. I will say also, to add to that, distinction in roles. We may touch on that.
Nice.
And then the last thing is that he's blessed them and asked them to be fruitful and multiply. I will stop there, and we will
pick up.
We will pick up next week. Something to wet your appetite.
We're all coming back next week.
Wet your appetite for next week. When you guys leave here this morning and your wife says, well, how was Bible study?
It said be fruitful
and multiply. What did you learn? What did you learn? What are you guys going to tell her? And hopefully it's not. Hopefully you're just joking about the be fruitful and multiply.
But it was the chicken.
Yeah.
That it was the chicken?
Yeah.
Ken's gonna tell him.
Can we? Don't?
Ken's gonna tell him that it was the chicken first, and not the egg.
There you go.
What else?
that man was created by committee.
Man was created by a committee. Okay.
Rational free agents.
That were rational free agents?
Yeah,
okay. And then she's going to quizzically say, what does that mean? Van, I have no idea.
She listens to the podcast.
What you're talking about? Oh, she listens to the podcast.
Yeah, you know.
Original righteousness. Throw that one up there.
Well, the real relationship. You know, God allowed the free agent our ability to think because he wanted a real relationship. He didn't want a bunch of programs. People out
so
there.
What I'll tell my wife.
Oh, this is. Oh, is that was all just a prelude.
Yeah.
The
guy, sorry,
go on.
You know what? It's
he wasn't even listening.
Yeah, let me decode that. We got it all wrong.
Well, I was hoping that you guys would say.
That's not decoding.
I was hoping that you guys would say. And that's my fault if I didn't.
What?
That we're image bearers of God.
Oh, yeah. That's
that all. That all people. All people deserve the respect and the dignity. And that we have the ability to know God because we bear His image. And we have His imprint on our lives. We have His imprint on our lives. We will only be in that perfect spot when we are conformed back to that image.